This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This week on Brummeets World...
Corey and Topanga,
Corey and Sean.
Corey and Sean.
Corey and Corey Sean.
Let's just say, if there's no Corey and Topanga, there's still a series. If there's Corey and Sean, no, wow. Corey and Sean, I don't want 7 years of that. Corey and Sean is the heart and soul of Boy Meets World. That's the number one, for me, reason to watch the show, to love the show. They complete each other, for
we
sure.
Love it. When this boy meets
world. What up, bros?
What up, bros? And welcome to Bruh Meets World. When it's Bruh Meets World,
your Boy Meets World phone calls. I'm Siege.
I'm Tony Curtis.
How Tony, Tom, Tom. I'm doing well. We have a really fun episode in line for everyone today.
But before I'm so excited for today's episode.
Before we do that, I want to talk about television. And by that, I mean the Emmys were yesterday when we were recording.
Oh,
did you watch?
No, I did not watch the Emmys.
You did not watch the Emmys?
You know, I'm a pop culture person, and I grew up watching all of the award shows all the time. But especially within like the last 10 years or so, the lack of acknowledgement for people of color in the works that they do by academies has got me to the point where I'm like, y'all's awards don't really mean shit to me the way they used to. And like, I get it, it's a big deal, but at the same time, there's powerful art that's never been given awards that has meant more to me than things that have. So it's lost its glimmer as years go by, I'll say.
It's so funny that you say that specific thing, because this year at the 75th Emmys award show, one, it was the first time an all black production team was at the helm. That was true.
But then I did also see they reunited Martin.
They were very adamant about acknowledging and giving flowers to black media and black art that had not been before. I, as a black person, I definitely watched this particular cast and I was like, oh, y'all are making up for lost time, but in a way that doesn't feel like egregious. It just felt natural, and it felt like a production team that appreciated television. This was the first award show in quite some time, and especially compared to like the Golden Globes. Mm-hmm. This was the first award show in quite some time that you were like, oh, you like what you're rewarding.
Yeah. You know, I will say this. I did see a few clips, actually, now that you're bringing up like the Martin thing and a few other ones. And yeah, it's cool that they reunited Martin. Would it have been cool to acknowledge them when they were actually like a record-breaking show? Absolutely. Would it have been cooler for the Grammys or the Oscars or the Emmys or any of these academies to say like, hey, we have a special category to acknowledge art from the past that did not get the acknowledgement that it did in the moment, but have lifetime achievement of some sorts, to acknowledge that Martin was a great show, but still leave them empty-handed? It's not going to change the stats of that show or bring them up in prestige at all, just to have them reunited to present an award. It's like when they had the cast of Always Sunny, and it's like, yeah, we've been no longer than all of y'all, but this is our first time here. It's like, just acknowledging shit doesn't correct shit all the time. So at least that's my perspective, and I'm probably being a little nitpicky, but...
No. Here's the thing. I think that it's worth it to me, and this is just my opinion. In my opinion, you got to start somewhere, and by acknowledging Martin, and like, again, there were lots of jokes that were like, hey, you guys are notorious for not acknowledging shows that deserve. Always Sunny. Always Sunny said the same thing you did to Martin. You know, like, there are lots, like, they had Marla Gibbs up there, and then they acknowledged that Quinta Brunson is the first person to win Best Actress in a Lead Role as a Black woman in the last 40-some years. Like, they were, in fact, acknowledging the past mistakes, and I think that, at least for our generation, you can't change the past, but we can course correct. And I think that starts by saying exactly what we do here. Hey, do better.
You know what? You're right. And again, like, I didn't watch it. Maybe it was a good show. Maybe I need to find some clips to get into the spirit of it. But I usually wait until I see the highlights the next day. That's what I've learned about a lot of these hype events.
I get it.
It's like, even like the whole idea of like the super time, the Super Bowl half show and the Super Bowl commercials. It's like, just go on YouTube on Monday. Like, why are y'all doing this? Like, it's over the top.
Well, it's because they love television. And as two people who love television, I gotta tell you about our episode today.
Oh, please do.
When we are talking about reflecting, when we are talking about appreciating, when we are talking about been in it since the beginning, we are talking about this special guest. Today, we are talking to Jeff Mennell,
who was the
longest running writer. I believe he was in all seven seasons of Boy Meets World and three seasons of Girl Meets World.
Jeff Mennell did everything but the original pilot episode that had a different cast.
Exactly.
So he was there from like the first episode that aired into the last episode of Girl Meets World. No one was there as much as probably Michael Jacobs, but even Michael Jacobs dipped for a few years. So
exactly.
Like, you know, he was so involved with all of it. And let me just say, by the way, we had Gary Miller, we had Mark Blutman. Now we have Jeff Mennell. Like, as I feel like Thanos collecting Infinity Stones of Boy Meets World. And guess what, Michael Jacobs? We coming for you.
So, yes, thank you guys. So, until then, really quickly, before we dive in, as usual, we have to do our shout-outs. Thank you guys for reaching out to us at Brum Meets World on all the places. You guys are reaching out to us on email. You are doing it on social media, YouTube, all the places. We appreciate the conversation. We love hearing from you guys. Let us know what you think about this episode. We used some of your questions that you asked on our Instagram poll to ask Jeff questions. So be sure to look out for your question if you submitted one, and be sure to continue to talk to us on all the platforms at Brum Meets World, or email us at brummeetsworld@gmail.com. Also, there will be an extended cut of this episode on our Patreon, patreon.com/brummeetsworld. And now that we've done all of the promo things.
All the promo things.
You guys, let's break them. It is our pleasure to be chatting with the special guest of this episode. Again, he was the self-described Jersey boy who, with the exception of Boy Meets World Pilot, was involved in every episode of Boy Meets World.
Specifically, the writer for And Then There Was Sean, one of the greatest episodes of the entire series.
Please welcome to the show, Jeff Mennell!
Hey!
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Welcome.
Right. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. We listened to your episode of Pod Meets World, which is how we helped prepare for this. But you were saying that you listened to some of our stuff. Which episodes did you listen to?
Well, I listened, two things. On the way home, I was just down like in LA and got here just in time, to be honest. So I decided, should I listen to the Gary Miller episode? I didn't really want to listen to anybody else talk about the show, but, you know, I did listen to it. And I was just saying, one, I don't want to, he's a hard act to follow. That guy's got, I mean, what credentials? He's been around forever. He is Mr. Hollywood. I'm just Boy Meets World, Girl Meets World, one little show in between. So it'll be a little bit of a different experience for you guys. But oh, and I listened to you guys dissect Angela's Men.
Yeah.
And,
yes.
and I really learned a lot. And listen, there's no self-deprecation or modesty or anything. Yeah, I know you did love it. I think Tony's rave was, you know, I'm okay with it, which is fine, which is totally okay. But listening to you guys dissect it is really interesting, because obviously I've never done that. I've seen a show once, maybe. I haven't seen that show since it aired. Wow. And so it's kind of fun to watch. Thanks to you guys, I watched 3 episodes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Women's World is a good show, I realized. It was really fun to watch. I was crying. I was laughing.
It's a great show. And, you know, obviously, we're kind of having a very modern approach to dissecting television the way that people do with, like, really intense dramas like Game of Thrones. They're dissecting everything. And Boy Meets World just wasn't meant for that. But it has been really fun for us. Yeah,
it doesn't stand up sometimes.
It's been really fun for us to look at it all.
Good.
We know that you started out as a movie reviewer.
Right.
What's something that you know now, being in Hollywood as long as you did, that you didn't know back before when you were reviewing movies that may have changed your opinion of critique or film or television?
That's a good question. Nothing. Nothing's changed. I mean, nothing's changed as far as how I look at stuff. I mean, yeah, I had a great. I was the New York film reviewer for the Hollywood Reporter. It was the greatest at the time. It was just the greatest job I've ever wanted. It was paid nothing. It was like $50 a review, but I would see at least 10 movies a week. I love movies. I mean, I learned a lot from being in TV. It was a whole new experience for me. I'll get into that in a minute. But as far as critiquing goes, listen, everyone has an opinion. Everybody's a critic, and I heard Gary even talk about this these days. Obviously, everybody's opinion is out there immediately, instantaneously. And that's not how it was when I was growing up. You know, you had to wait for the reviews to come out in the newspaper, you know, or Gene Shalit, you know, on the Today Show. And so for me, being a film reviewer, it was the greatest gig. And I had to give it up, actually, to move out here to work on Boy Meets World. And it wasn't an easy give up, to be honest. But I'm so glad I did. This is the TV experience. Obviously opened my eyes to everything Hollywood. I had no experience whatsoever. I was 38 years old, kind of older than most newbies, but I was like a kid when I started. I mean, kid on the sound stage. Yeah, we shot on the Disney lot. I know I'm kind of all over the place. I don't know what question you asked, but my first day I'm on the Disney lot.
Wow.
I go into the animation building. That's where our offices were. And you see all the artwork from, you know, Fantasia, from everything. We go to the sound stage, which is where Mary Poppins was shot. And I'm like, I mean, this, you know, I'll get to the bad part of the job later, but I'm from Jersey. I never expected to come out here ever. And I'm just walking around there. And I mean, for months I was every day, I'm just pointing at stuff on the lot and people say, stop that, act cool. You know? And it was a very eye-opening experience. As far as the business goes, yeah, I've learned a lot over the years. You can't help it. I'm not very business savvy. I'm certainly not even TV writer savvy. I just did my job. I loved what I was doing. I never knew you were expected to look for other work, because why would I?
Yeah.
And it kind of served me well.
That's so great. You talk about it the way that we kind of talk about it. We started this podcast because we love television and we love movies. And when I was listening to your episode of Pod Meets World, that joy and that kind of like wonder of Hollywood and television really came through. Okay. And for TC and I, that's inspirational, because you said you were 38. We're like in our mid-30s is what I'll say. So to hear like your journey of like, hey, I didn't even get started till this time. Like, what was that like to be, again, kind of like mid-30s and change careers?
Yeah, it was, I'll tell you a little just quickly about the genesis of how I got the job. And it was not, you know, it sounds like it should be an easy decision. Ultimately it was. But so my path's a little different. And yeah, I have a connection. I've known Michael Jacobs, the guy who created Boy Meets World. We've been friends since I was 7 years old. We were friends forever. I never once thought about even trying to come out and work for him, because one, I never wanted to leave Jersey and New York. I loved it there. Had a great life going on. And he had a lot of shows on the air, as you know. I think he's had like 15 or 16 series. But then a friend of mine back there goes, hey, why don't we pitch an idea to your buddy Mike on My Two Dads? And I go, oh, I don't know. All right, let's do that. And we started doing that. And he kept shooting stuff down. And sometimes he'd like it. He goes, we're doing it. Maybe next year. I don't know if he was humoring me or not, but I don't really care. I only wanted to sell an idea. I never wanted to come out here. And then I sent him a spec script I wrote on my own, a Seinfeld spec. I may told this on the Pod Meets World.
Yeah.
So I hate repeating stuff, but
you're fine.
I have no choice. It was a Seinfeld. I was actually pretty proud of it. And I thought, oh, this is good. I sent to him and he actually really liked it. And I said, oh, can you get to the Seinfeld people? And he goes, yeah, which is a lie, complete lie. Because, you know, you don't send specs for that show to that show because legal reasons, they won't even read it. But he actually liked the first thing I've ever sent him that he liked. And then that was it. And then a few months later, I get a call from him saying, hey, I have a pilot I wrote. We just shot it. And if it goes, do you think you'd want to, you know, be on staff? And I go, oh, I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know. Literally, we just, my wife is about to give birth. We just bought a house in Jersey. And I go, and I was working on a book thing. I won't go into that. And I go, I don't know. Maybe. And I didn't think, honestly, I didn't even think about it. 3 months later, he calls. This is, I guess, May or June. And he goes, hey, they picked up the show for 13 episodes. I need to know by tomorrow, do you want this job? And I go, what? I mean, I got such a headache immediately. I hate change. My daughter had been born in this time. She's like 2 months old.
Oh.
And I remember I sat down with my wife. I go, well, you know, obviously within an hour, we realized, well, what idiot would turn that down? So I went out by myself to California for 6 months without my newborn baby and my wife. She had to deal with that. And it was kind of a no-brainer. Although he did tell me, he goes, one thing, though, the woman who co-created the show with me, she's going to hate you because she wanted someone on staff and I'm the bigger cheese.
You took the spot.
I took the spot. And I said, why'd you have to tell me that? I hate animosity. I don't like conflict. And there was some conflict when I came out, but it was all good. It was all good.
I think Boy Meets World is almost like a home feeling for a lot of people. Like, as you said, it's like, that's what I know. It's nostalgic whenever I revisit it. I can get that comfort feel. So even though it has its flaws, there's plenty of things that I just enjoy.
Well, that's great. I love that. Listen, you know, I heard Gary touch upon this. During Boy Meets World, we didn't really know. I mean, we did okay in the ratings. We were never picked up for more than one season at a time. So, I mean, it was a marginal hit, but we had no idea of the fan base for it. Yeah. And when Girl Meets World was announced, all of a sudden, all these things come out on the internet. Like, oh my God, this is the most exciting thing. You know, we grew up on Boy Meets World, and only literally since then, but not in the interim, not in the first 20 years. In that time, I started meeting people that would say, "Oh my God, the show!" Like, people love the show. Who know the show? Not everyone loves it, but the people that love the show love the show, and that was really an exciting thing to learn. Honestly, almost 20 years after the fact, you go, "Wow, I had no idea." And so that was really. Really exciting. And when I do watch some episodes, obviously it brings back certain memories for me. But the ones I just watched today, I really watched them not as someone that was part of shooting it, but as a fan. And it was like, wow, the cast is so good. I mean, everyone was so talented on that show. It really was fun. And I was on the show all seven for every episode, which, you know, I have to say that gives me pause sometime, but I had a little piece in every single episode, certainly more on the ones that have my name on it, but it was just it was a great collaboration, and I met some of the greatest people. I'm still very good friends, obviously, Gary and Mark and Howard Busking, and my, you know, I don't want to, one of my closest friends passed away. Sorry, Matt Nelson. Yeah, he was a big part of the show and of my life. And but Gary, everyone talks about it. That's your family. Yeah, you're in there, honestly, sometimes, 36 hours. That's rare. Yeah. But a lot of hours. Certainly are you with them much more than you are with the family. I didn't see my kids much during the first 7 years. And you get to know each other honestly on an intimate level that you just really wouldn't even be comfortable telling your wife about stuff that you tell in their room. It's just something about it. It stays in the room, and it's a cathartic thing. You know, you be that open so you can be that open with the writing and the pitching and everything. And it's really a unique experience.
One of the things we were very excited to have
you on for is the fact that you have been a part of the show throughout the entire run of it. Yeah. You know, we are in the later half of the show. We are now like at the beginning of season 7. You, from a fan perspective, as we are, you know, kind of the voice of the fans, when we go out there, when we go to these live events, when we're talking to people, the overall consensus is that like seasons 3 through 5 are everyone's favorite. And oh, yeah? One of the things that I find interesting about that is, you know, obviously season 6, there's the move to college. And I guess, you know, from a writer's perspective, you know, when you hear that, hey, we're taking the cast to college, right, is there a lot of conversation that goes into how that move is going to happen? How do we make the show feel similar through this change? Like, what was that transition between 5 and 6 like?
Yeah, I mean, and let me just apologize in advance. My memory about everything is very vague, honestly. It's all, I won't have the specific knowledge that a lot of people have. Even Gary or Mark, they remember things. But I do remember that, of course, because, you know, the big joke was, yeah, how do we bring Feeny? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost... You know, there's a pathetic fine line between pathetic and you know artistic. But of course, we had to bring him. You know, so but the kids got older. You know, they can't stay in high school for past 6 years without looking like you know they're idiots. And so we had to advance them. Had to go to college. There was kind of an excitement to it because okay. You know you the playing field. You kind of want to change at a certain point. You know what I mean? Yes, of course, like Cheers, always going to be at a bar. But our kids were getting older. And so college, it was a natural progression. And we're glad they didn't want to cancel the show once we wanted to go to college. And so, yeah, the conversation was, how do we do it? How do we include everyone, even the parents, because they're going to be less involved. And I think they probably were. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there were B stories that included them. And they were great. We never wanted to get rid of anybody. But bringing Feeny along was, I mean, that was the reveal of him as Dean was just kind of, you know, well, we have to do it and everyone's expecting us to do it. So let's just try to do it the best way and the funniest way possible. But once we made the decision, we moved ahead. It was kind of like the stories kind of came out naturally and it was like, okay, now let's move along. And then to get to the very end where they eventually are going to leave college and move on with their lives. It was really, you know, I never wanted the show to end, but I think it, 7 years was a pretty good run. And I think it ended before it started, like, you know, now what, you know, before people go, okay, story's over. So I think it actually, even though I never wanted the show to end for a lot of reasons, financial, you know, this is where I've been going for 7 years. I don't want to change. But it felt right, you know? So yeah, but the college thing was a natural progression that just had to happen. And we wanted to do it as smooth as possible. I haven't seen the transition episode, so I don't know, how it worked. You could tell me.
No, things that we're very adamant about is with the show, especially for one that's going that long, as you said, it was 7 seasons, and that's not a given for any show. So for Boy Meets World, when it does kind of like change these scenes, like we went from like really young when it was just Feeny's classroom to high school to college, you do kind of lose some characters along the way. Were there any characters that you really wanted to hold on to, but for whatever reason we had to let go of?
Well, I mean, you know, well, certainly, you know, I everyone loves Frankie and Joey, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Harley and Griff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't even remember how we lost them. It's funny, I've learned through your show and also through the other podcast, they didn't do all that many episodes, but I feel like they were around forever. You know what I mean? And so I did miss them just because they were just fun. They were fun to write for. They were fun to watch. They were all great. I don't know if that happened because we went to college. I actually don't even remember when they stopped being on the show. But they were really, I just love them as actors also. They were great kids. Now were they 40s, but they were kids. They were kids, you know. And so I missed them. Even in the early years, I missed Minkus, right? That's
Minkus
was great. And you know, I never know sometimes why things happen. I wasn't in the decision making process at the beginning. I started as a staff writer, you know, didn't become producer until later, but you find out things, you know, like, oh, that's, they're not coming back. Oh, what? Those writers aren't here. I don't even know that till we get in the writers' room sometimes. And yeah. I go, oh, interesting. Later on, I became part of that process, but not early on. And I was just always happy to have the job. I was always happy that we got renewed. And yeah, but I mean, you know, and I don't like change in general, but I knew the show had to change, but I knew we would never lose the core. You know what I mean? So, and then we added people like, you know, Mr. Turner and Eli and Angela, you know, and that was fun. And Blake, you know, Blake Clark is Sean's dad. So the show evolved and the stories maybe got a little more serious towards the last couple of seasons.
I was actually going to bring that up. You know, season six, we have, you know, Corey hits a teacher, Sean's dad dies, and Corey's little brother almost dies in the hospital, all within like five weeks of each other. Like it's a very like dark blip in season six.
Let me just tell you, John Strauss, who was on the first season, him and Ed Decker were team, and they were co-executive producers. And so they left the show after the first season. He called, I guess it was season, whatever season you were just talking about. It must have been when the baby was, season you know. Six. Yeah, and I think it was a two-parter of a baby in ICU, and he called and he goes, I thought you guys were a comedy. What happened? When did it change? And I go, well, you know, there's a little laughs here, and there was heart, but it was that replicated the story of Michael's life, and sometimes stories dictated where the show went in terms of tone, you know, and that was part of it. And sometimes it's just a good story, like Corey hitting that teacher. That was great.
Yeah.
That's a great episode.
That's one of our favorite episodes from that season, actually. Yeah.
I think that's Matt's. I'm not sure, but it doesn't matter. Fred played the teacher, right? Yeah. His brother. Yeah. And he was great. He was chilling. And stuff like that. And Blake, Blake dying. I don't remember how that was pitched or not, but that was great. And then again, I know Gary talked about it, but we did. We love Blake so much that we go, sorry, we killed you. Come back. Can you come back as a ghost? And that worked too. I never felt Blake's reappearance was cheesy. Sure. So, but you're right. It took, and again, I think that's part of, not that you run out of silliness, but you run out of, you kind of want to, you know, get better with the ideas, the story ideas. You want them to grow a little bit. And sometimes that involves less funny, but I mean, we always had Eric.
Yeah.
when we needed funny, I know how you felt about him in Angela's Men. I gotta tell you, I watched that. I laughed. I was crying today, forgetting how funny he was. Yes, it was stupid. Listen, I have to tell you, one time Eric Will came to us and begged us, can I please stop being an idiot? He didn't want to be an idiot anymore. And we go, have you watched the show? Do you see how funny you are? And I understood where he was coming from, but also we needed him, you know, to be like that. And his dream would have been to be on SNL. I think Jim Carrey was his idol. And he was a real revelation for us early on. We didn't know he was that funny when he was cast. He was good. He was a big brother. And then he had naturally give, and I'm telling you, when he's in that women's outfit, just, he was in a stupid case. Yeah, the couch cushion was funny, but that was ridiculous. But just his commitment to the bits is what I loved about him. So I know I always seem to angle off whatever your question you're talking about, but I'm just talking about that if we go like with an ICU baby, we can have Eric getting struck by lightning on the side just to lighten things up for a second. And and I think that's how we justified the idiocy. Along with the realism of the show itself. But to answer your original question, I don't know how it got darker in that particular season. I think it's just stories get pitched and Michael likes them and then the network likes them and we go, yeah, let's do that. And then in the writing, sometimes they'll get even heavier, you know? Sure. And so, and that's just, listen, I like the fact that they let us do shows like that at times because a lot of networks, executives will say, no, you're a comedy, keep it light, keep it this. And as you said, we've dealt with some, you know, heavy duty, you know, molestation, drinking, this and that. I'm proud of those that we were able to do that in those episodes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, Boy Meets World always had the balance, or not always, but it was known for having the balance of kind of really serious topics, but also light, fun antics that we could have. And I want to clarify, with Will specifically, it's very clear that he's a comedic genius. We love him for what he's done. I think for a lot of people, it's always been... where did the development of some of these characters go? Because, you know, like, I think specifically you wrote Stormy Weather, which is such a great Eric episode. And we see his potential as a weatherman, but then we don't see it go anywhere. And we were just, like, as fans, we want to know, was that ever, like, considered? Did you ever consider the fact that we kind of set him up to be a weatherman, or Corey to be in the media, but we just, like, don't want to go in that direction? Or did it, like, not even come up?
Again, this would be, my memory will be vague, but I honestly don't think it was a conscious decision to keep Eric from, you know, growing as a human being or getting more mature. I think it was just certain episodes, like there's one where him and Rusty, you know, father, son, very poignant moments. You know, like where I think it started with a joke with Rusty jumping out of a plane, ostensibly to not have a conversation with Eric, but it became a very kind of heavy episode. And I think, and again, I don't know. I'm just sort of making this up as I'm thinking about it. But I think Eric, we never wanted to lose the comedy value that we could always tap when we needed to. Yeah. And again, I don't think this is a conscious decision, but I think if we made him almost like too mature, too grown up, it would be hard to go back to that. So it was kind of great to have that. sorry, I'm laughing because I'm thinking of, you know, when they were getting married, or when, was this their wedding? When Corey and Sean are having a big, big fight.
Yeah.
And he calls them, like, you know,
Trailer trash.
Yeah. And Eric just goes, Sean's poor. I mean, it's such a funny moment in a heavy situation. But for me, it makes the show. And I would not want to lose that. And I think we might have lost that if we went in a certain direction. But I do feel that Eric as a character did develop, even if he was imbecilic at times and funny. But I mean, he was always there when Corey needed him. He was a good big brother. He was there for Sean. He was there for Topanga. You know, him and Feeny had some great, great moments. So yeah, I don't think it was a conscious decision. I just think it's sort of, but every now and then someone would pitch an idea with Eric, and no one, we would never shy away with it because no, we don't want him to not be funny. So a lot of decisions about the characters just sort of naturally happened. I don't think we made many, like, you know, we're going to keep Corey this way. We're going to, you know, Feeny. Sure. But, you know, but the characters and the relationships, like Corey and Topanga, that story involved ridiculous.
Yeah.
Break up, get together, got married. And him and Sean, I mean, boy, they rub off on each other. I mean, that's the evolution of the show. You see Corey and Sean in the first season. Yeah, Sean's a dope, you know, and then it becomes this, like, you know, heavy duty, you know, poet. Tragic poet. And Ben and Corey, you know, and I think it really speaks to the acting abilities of the entire cast. You know, like I said, Will could be hysterical, but it could be poignant. You know, Ben could be silly and goofy, but he had some heavy duty scenes with everybody. And same with Ryder, obviously, and Danielle. You know, sorry, you know, you're the fans, but yeah. I love the cast. Every single, I think they're amazing. And the directors, everybody involved with the show, it really was a collaborative communal property that everyone made it better.
You know, you're doing a great job of giving flowers to everyone, but I have to pause and give flowers to you because I'm pretty sure you wrote the most significant episode of the series, which is And Then There Was Sean, which is literally the episode I show people to get them interested into Boy Meets World. It's an episode that I feel
you shouldn't
like
do lives, that. Because that's not like the own, show.
It lives on its own. You can watch it as just a Halloween special. It's such a great well-written episode that actually incorporates the Corey and Topanga conflict of them breaking up in a fun way in the dream sequence. Can you talk a little bit about what that episode was like, you know, from a writing perspective or a production perspective, yeah, and what you think makes it different in the minds of fans?
Well, and like you said, I was a film reviewer. I love movies my whole life. This story sort of, I don't remember the genesis of why we were going to do like a Scream type episode. Maybe they wanted a Halloween episode. But regardless, it was in the air. And for the first time in my and only time my 7 years, I fought to get this one because I said, man, I'm the right guy for this. I'm sorry. You know, and I won't go through all the machinations of it, but ultimately I went to Michael and I said, hey, I'm just telling you, I've never asked you for anything, but this, and he goes, no, of course you should write this. And I end up writing. So he ended up giving it to me. And so here's the other thing. So when you're given a script, everyone breaks the story, you write an outline that gets approved, then you send off the script. First season, you had 2 weeks send off to write it. But by this season, I'm one of the producers and I'm involved in everything. So I don't even leave. You don't leave the offices. You just stay in your own room and write it. And, you know, it takes about a week, 10 days to write a good first draft. But I wrote this in 2 days. But I had a lie because I remember I came out one day, second day, Mike goes, so where are you? You know, and I go, I'm on page 30. So he goes, you better not be. I go, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But I was done. So I had to go back to my room and I kept rewriting it and making it better. But I had such fun writing this because you can do a show like this. No, you can't do this in the first two seasons, first three seasons. The shows have to be established. Characters have to be established for you to be able to go to this parallel universe and keep them through to their characters, but have fun with it. So, I mean, I've seen a million horror movies and for me to be even reference things, you know, and listen, a lot of my stuff got cut just because whatever, inappropriate or whatever. But
oh, man.
I would say, what's that?
I said, oh, man, we want to know those.
We need an extended cut, yeah.
Yeah, well, I wish it was shot. Yeah. There was one line that almost survived, but the networks cut it, and it was so stupid that they cut it. But anyway, that's just my own personal demon. So the script for me was my best first draft ever. And it was probably the least rewritten. I mean, it was rewritten, went through the mill, but it was – a lot of it was intact. So I was really just excited. And then, I always give him the majority of the credit because I got to be honest, he deserves it. I just watched it today. Jeff McCracken, who directed a lot of our episodes, I think he did. Yeah. I don't know how many. I'm sure he did the majority of them. But he's first of all, he's a close friend of mine. He's a brilliant in everything. He's an art. Now he's an artist. I'm telling you, he's the painter that is – I still can't. Every time I look at one, I think he's faking it because how can he be that good at everything? He's an actor, he's a writer, he's a director, he's a playwright. Anyway, but he had a vision, and Jeff always had this amazing passion. And so he happened to love my draft, and he loved the ultimate script. And he came in and he took it and he ran with it. And I'm telling you, I'm not kidding. He did such a great job of just with the music and the lighting and the angles and with the cast. He made that show what it, I mean, I'm certainly a big part of it. Everyone's a part of it. I'm a big part of it. He's the biggest part of it in my mind. Michael Jacobs, of course, is the biggest part of every episode. I have to say that contractually. I'm joking, Mike. No, but he had some great stuff in there. I think his was the pencil going down the wall joke.
Yeah,
which was great brilliant.
Joke. We'll always brilliant. Remember he was this tall.
This tall. I'm telling you, I watch it like I'd never seen the show today. I go, that's so funny and scary. And people, some fans really, really were upset. There were some letters like people were saying, I can't believe my kid is traumatized. And what? And this, oh, yeah, there were letters. And again, we had no internet back then. So all we heard was a couple letters of people really being upset. But I think it did well. It didn't, as you know, it didn't air on Halloween. I think it aired
in like February. April or March or something.
Yeah. So I don't know what the reason for that was, but that's out of our control. I don't care. But for me, it was really fun to take our characters and write them a little skew. You know, like Will with the you hear the ball and then, you know, hidey ho. And that's during, you know, South Park era. So even though I think that's, what's it called? When it's timely and it no longer works. That works on its own. I'm just saying hi to ho. But, Jack was annoying and Angela being the screamer.
Yes.
And And Will was dating Jennifer Love Hewitt at the time. So getting her was actually great. Bob Tischler named her Pfefferman, which is just silly but funny. And
Pfeffy.
Yeah, Pfeffy.
One of my favorite jokes from that episode that's kind of underrated, Sean has a few examples where he's like, oh, there's blood in the showers, just like the horror movie classic, Blood in the Showers.
Right, right. Those are great. Yeah, those guys. I mean, I think I did have one of those in my original draft, and then, you know, they got expounded on, people pitched on them, so they got bigger and bigger. Yeah, there was a lot of jokes in that. But then, of course, you know, ultimately, it's a serious moment. You know, it's
yes.
The breakup, I can't handle the breakup, so I'm living in this nightmare, you know, and it was good, and Feeney was good, and, you know, I mean, it was, you know, with a silly little tag, but it was certainly my favorite episode that I was, my name on it, you know?
Absolutely. Like, to that point, there are a few things. One, as TC knows, Scream is my favorite movie of all time. So the idea
that the hell out of me.
The idea that this episode was based on my favorite movie is just, so like I love you for it, and I appreciate it.
And I love you for loving it. Thank you. Yeah.
But also, to that point, we've noticed there have been a lot of episodes that seem like they were inspired by movies that came out, but they came out so soon after. We were like, did you guys like, did the writers' room get secret?
Like, okay, yeah, we have two examples of this. Yeah. One example is the Truman Show episode, where the movie came out only a few months before the episode aired. And then there was the episode where
Last Tango in Philly.
Oh, Last Tango in Philly.
Full Monty. Yeah.
And then the Topanga and Corey are getting ready for their wedding episode is very similar to this Bruce Willis and Michelle Pfeiffer movie that came out around that same time. I think it was like This Is Us or Story of Us or something like that, where they're in couples therapy and the entire episode is them being filmed in couples therapy but talking to the camera. And it's almost exactly the style of the episode, and it came out like the month before. There was just a lot of these moments we were like, pop culture, like this is definitely something in pop culture the moment.
Yeah.
But it seems like you guys were ahead of it, or like right in time with it in a lot of ways.
Well, two of those were definitely, and I don't know, I can't explain what the timing is. I felt like the Truman Show had to have come out way before because, you know, it takes a while to shoot a show and then have it air and all that, but it doesn't take that long. You know, it's not like making a movie. It's like, you know, if we write it and we shoot it, it could be on the air in a few weeks. So the Truman Show was certainly a ripoff or an homage, rather.
Yeah.
I think the episode is called The Truman Show, isn't it? I mean, So there's no getting away from that. Last Tango in Philly was certainly inspired by Full Monty, which is, I love that movie. Okay. I actually saw it with Blutman. I remember he was in the theater with me. And but this is going to sound self-deprecating. That's not a good episode. I mean, it was inspired by that, but I have no idea what the point of that show was. I don't remember anything about it other than Sean does a handstand dance move at the end. That's all I remember from that episode. That was intentionally inspired by Full Monty. The one you're talking about with the Bruce Willis, I think that's just coincidental. No, I've never heard of that movie. I don't think anyone in that I worked with even knows of that movie. So that might just be amazing coincidence, you know. But I remember those moments, and that it was pretty good, them talking to the cameras.
So some of them were in fact some of them were in fact from like the movies that you saw. You said you saw Full Monty, but again, Full Monty came out like months before this episode aired. So that's why we were wondering if you guys saw like an early cut or something.
Nah. I'm not connected. I went to the theater in Encino and saw it, and I loved it. And again, I don't even know if I pitched an idea. Again, I have no idea the genesis of it. But a lot of times things are in the air culturally and otherwise, and people go, oh, we should do something like that. So I think it was that simple. Wow. Full Monty. Obviously, they weren't going to take their clothes off, but they were going to do something embarrassing. Man, I should go back and watch it, because honestly, I have no clue what the storyline was on that. I'm curious. I don't even remember. I'm curious.
We can tell you.
I know you can, yeah, if you want. But we don't have to waste time on it unless you want to.
We actually just rewatched it, and it was very interesting because the whole premise is that the girls just want to go dancing, but the boys can't figure out how to please their girls. Right. So the whole episode is like, we want to go dancing, and then at the end, they finally put on a dance performance for them.
Oh, my God. How did we make that into an episode of television? All right. Not every episode is stellar, but most Boy Meets World episodes are very good.
I have a question that I'm so curious, and I don't know if you remember any details of this, but I've always wanted to know. Okay. The series finale, I think, is one of the best series finales in the history of television. You guys, I think, pay a perfect homage to the show we all fall in love with. The episode is split up between these flashback sequences from early episodes and a current story that's happening in the moment about the kids moving to New York. Right. I was always so curious if you guys knew what clips were going to be referenced in that writing process, or if it was thrown in afterwards.
No. We picked the clips. Yeah, you have to pick the clips because you have to write to it. You can't. It would be very weird if you just generically. Well, I remember that time that thing happened, you know. I can't remember specifically the two writers. I think it was Bob Tischler and Matt Nelson wrote the last two parts together, and try, do good, all that stuff. It was great. It was brilliant. It was such a satisfying finale, like you say. It was worth making it into two episodes and showing some clips. No, that was poured over by either the writers or the staff, or we put someone else on it and said, we need a clip like this, bore through it, give us choices. And then that became part of the writing process as well. So no, that can't be cavalier. Michael Jacks would never allow anyone else to approve certain clips that are going to be in a show that were not pertinent to what we're writing about. So I'm sure he certainly had a major hand in at least approving. Maybe, and he, in his mind, and he would have a very good memory of stuff that say, well, that episode would work here. So I don't remember who specifically picked them, but they were handpicked by the creative staff.
You have like episodes like By Hook or By Crook, Janitor Dad, Easy Street,
Pulp Fiction.
Cult Fiction.
The Eskimo.
I'm very proud of my titles, by the way.
Yeah. Those episodes are all very good around Sean. Like, they really developed Sean as a character. Like, do you think that you just connected with Sean? Like, what was it about his particular character that made you write such memorable episodes?
Well, and once again, let me just rephrase or reiterate. Rewritten and through, everything goes through the Michael Jacobs mill. Everything. Okay. He's at the comm. He types. And in the old days, I mean, this was the most painful thing. And again, I'm not bad-mouthing. This was just a horrible thing to witness as a writer. You hand in a script, and if he didn't like it, he would just take a pencil and start crossing out all your words and then start typing a whole new script. So that was a very painful process. But the bottom line is every script gets rewritten in the room, the voice. So I'm certainly not the voice of Sean. I mean, I've written for Sean a lot of his dialogue. I've written dialogue for every character, even Feeny. That's probably my most rewritten stuff because what do I know about someone like that? But I did feel like I could write for Sean at times. I mean, everyone did. Matt Nelson was considered, especially in the later years, the voice of Sean, because Matt had a lot of angst. And when Sean was the angst-ridden character, Michael would go, Matt, what would Sean say? So it was that kind of room. It really was. Mm-hmm. Just everyone really did contribute. So I think it just happened to be a lot of my episodes were Sean ones. A lot of times I don't even know why I ended up writing the ones I did. I mean, except for the Scream one and The Provider, that one I felt very connected to. And Stormy Weather, like you said, those are probably three of my personal favorites. A lot of the other ones I'm very proud of, but those just because I really remember when I was writing it, I really felt I was into the character.
Well, there's no denying that you had an undeniable fingerprint on this series. Like you said, you were with it for its entire run. We were able to talk to Blutman a little bit about this as well, but the transition over to Girl Meets World, what was that like for you, your experience with Girl Meets World? I'll say this, we're in season 7 right now. I've actually not seen Girl Meets World, so as we do our watch through will be my first time watching a lot of it. I know Steve just watched a lot of it.
You did, okay. But,
There's we've heard a lot of stories about Girl Meets World and the set and the writer's room and things like that, and I guess I just wanted to know what was that like for you?
Yeah, So Michael called me and Matt one day to have lunch, and he said, so this guy at Disney, Corey Marsh, called him. Corey Marsh was a huge Boy Meets World fan, and he called Michael saying, I guess it was the 20th anniversary or 25th. I can't do the math. 2016. Yeah, I think it was the 20th anniversary of Boy Meets World, right? And so he said, I want to reboot. I want to do Boy Meets World. I want to do it again. And he called Michael, who was in Florida at the time. And Michael goes, I will never do that. It's an iconic series. I would never touch that show. But here's what I'll do. And this is where Michael, he can sell something. He can come up with something like that. He goes, what I'll do is Girl Meets World. And, you know, and I don't know if Ben and Danielle or Corey and Topanga were part of the initial pitch, but he was going to do a Girl Meets World show. Like, it was going to be Girl, who also, I guess, is involved with the teacher. And then it became, and they liked that idea. And I think they even bought it. And then he goes, oh, wait, what if we get, you know, Corey and Topanga to be the parents? And so, and that's all him. And he did it. And they go, sold, boom. Now, initially, my reaction and Matt's reaction was, well, this is embarrassing. I mean, you know, we can't do anything new. It's got to be that show. But once Ben and Danielle came aboard, and it really became something that I think we got pretty excited about. Plus, you know, I needed the job, and it was hard. The pilot experience was one of the worst experiences of my life. Almost killed Michael. Almost killed us. I mean, round the clock, horrible. Last minute rewriting, last minute recasting. There was a different brother. The kid is, you don't know the show, but there's a young brother, but he was older in the original pilot. And nothing to do with him. Kid was great. Can't remember his name, unfortunately. He was really good. It just didn't work. So it was like just a really, really, really painful process. Disney Channel is different than ABC. So it was a different audience, different world. It was a different feel. But we were pretty excited. Once we got going, and once they picked up the pilot, we went to all these testing seminars and listening to boys talk about it and girls talk about it, and we learned a lot. We didn't have quite the freedom that we did with Boy Meets World to do what we wanted, and also it's hard because, you know, we never talked down. I'd say the beauty of Boy Meets World and even Girl Meets World, we never talked down to kids, but I think on Girl Meets World, I think we had to be a little more cognizant of the Disney Channel age and audience. I'm not sure if we did. I'm proud of that show too. It was a different experience. Novelty wasn't quite there for me. It was sort of like a little crankier age for everyone involved. It wasn't super fun, but I'm proud of a lot of the shows. And again, just like on Boy, I'm very good friends with a lot of the writers from that show. Sure. Some of them were new. A couple were from the old days. Me, Mark Blumman, and Matt were from the original show. And there's people we worked with before. And, you know, our writer's assistant got a script on the show, and him and I were good friends. So, I mean, that's the thing I love about all these. And I miss, that's the one thing I miss most about even the workplace. You go in the office and there's, you know, 100 people between, you know, all the support staff and on the craft service. I love craft service. And I just, you know, and it's just every day going, hey, and there was a lot of fun, a lot of laughter. It was just, it wasn't quite a smooth running ship as it was on Boy Meets World. But I'm glad it happened. And I thought that cast was great also. It was fun to have Ben. And to revive Corey and Topanga was kind of risky, but cool. A lot of fans were nervous, like, don't you ruin that iconic, you know, image we have in our head. And I don't think we ruined it. I don't know if we evolved it, but I'd be curious to talk to you guys off air after you watch it to see what you think, you know, it ended up being something that, there's a handful of episodes I go, wow, those are really, really good. And again, maybe a little more serious than we should for the Disney Channel audience at times, but you know, Michael Jacobs is always going to have, there's always going to be heart. It's always going to be, you know, try to do something, move people and impact people. And if it's a little bit above, that's okay. You know? Yeah. So yeah, I'm proud of it.
Yeah, we actually, we talk about this very often. We love that the show didn't talk down to children. And it actually did give you really heartfelt or serious topics to think over, because the problem that we feel now anyway is a lot of children's shows are just made for kids as if they are kids and they'll stay that way. And it doesn't right. challenge them to think about the world around them. So we appreciated the episodes that like dealt with a little bit of the tough and rough parts of life, both yeah. in Boy Meets World and Girl Meets World, because that's what you're seeking when you're a child.
Right. No, that's good. Well, I'm glad you feel that way. Cause yeah, that was always the goal. I mean, obviously there's going to be a silly episode here and there where you just go, well, that was silly, but it was still fun. But ultimately, you know, they're always trying to have some heart in every episode, trying to have a message in every episode, even if it's, you know, tiny. And I'm more proud of Boy Meets World in hindsight than I was during it, you know, because just because you're caught up in the, oh my God, is this season going to ever end? And you know, and can I recharge for the next season? I mean, it really is a bit of a grind, but it's also magical at times. And there's stuff that have nothing to do with the show. Just the writers' room antics were like, I mean, there's some, they're just so, I mean, I look back on some, I laugh at that. They wouldn't even translate. It's not that I can't tell you, they just wouldn't translate, but just that kind of comfort level and meanness. I mean, these are mean people. A lot of the times there's a lot of cruelty, a lot of dysfunction, but always funny. I mean, these are funny people I got to work with. So I'm, you know, I learned a lot from everyone I worked with and you know, And you know, Michael and Mark and Gary, I mean, Howard, you know, Matt, everybody, you know, from Teresa, Barbie Feldman, I mean, just so many people. David Brownfield, I feel like I have to name everyone out. But there's a lot, you know, there's a lot. Even ones that were only there for half the season or one season, I loved every single one of them, you know, and I'm sad when anyone didn't come back. I go, oh, man. Yeah. You know, but that's the nature of the business.
Yeah, that's actually really good because, again, as far as we're concerned, you guys collectively made like a timeless television. And so we have a segment that we ask. We did this with Blattman. We forgot to do it with Gary, but we will ask you. It's an either or, really quick, rapid fire. It's called At the Fence with Feeney. We're just going to give you a really quick list of either ors. You let us know what side you're on. They're very common debated parts of Boy Meets World lore.
Okay.
So first and foremost, should Topanga have gone to Yale? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good to go.
I mean, not for the show, but for her. Yeah, no. Pembroke. Yeah, no, of course. Yeah, she should have gone to Yale. She's too smart. You know, and she and Corey still would have ended up, I think. Yeah. Although probably not. But anyway.
I mean, we got to go into that part because really quickly, I know this is supposed to be rapid fire, but we look at the Corey and Topanga relationship now. And Gary talked about it. It's like it was supposed to be tenuous. They were getting married young. But do you think, based on what you've seen now, you would want Corey and Topanga to end up together?
Oh, that's a great question. Wow, never thought about that. Well, you know, without my insight into the people or the characters, I'm just going to go with Boy Meets World.
Yeah,
that's okay with you. Yeah, they have to be together. I mean, honestly, of course, man. After what they've been through, I mean, they're on paper, they're not compatible. What is she doing with him? You know, she definitely, you know, and I don't mean Danielle and Ben. I mean Corey and Topanga. Yeah. But they really complement each other beautifully. Yeah, Romeo and Juliet, they deserve each other. They belong to each other. So, yes.
Okay, next question.
My answer, yeah.
Next question, side yard or backyard?
Well, I can speed this one because I heard the Pod Meets World people discuss this ad nauseum. I've never even heard the word side yard. It is a side yard, but I would have thought it was a backyard prior to that conversation. So,
it's to be honest, to me,
yeah, it is a side yard. No, it is a side yard, but I never heard of that. I never even heard of that in existence. It is a side yard, but watching the show, it made it feel like it's a backyard. So
You ever seen a team corner lot? Cause we're team corner lot as well. Like the house is just on a corner space.
Well, that makes sense. I'll go with that. Thank you.
Next one.
Yeah.
Eric and Jack or Eric and Rachel?
As what? Best couple?
Yeah, best couple. Like, which is a better couple? Would you right now?
Yeah, Eric and Jack. I gotta tell you, I feel like they don't get enough credit. I think Eric and Jack were great together. I love Rachel. I love Maitland, mm-hmm. and I love Matt. I love Matt. He was great. But I feel Eric and Jack are so really. I mean, yeah, that almost more than Corey and Topanga. They're opposites, but they really complete each other. Yeah. They are a complete person. I think Eric was great for Jack. Jack was great for Eric. I love them, and I wish there was more of them.
Have you ever heard the Jarek part of it? The people who ship them as a couple?
No.
There's an entire internet Reddit theory about how they were just roommates, but they were very close. They were very attractive, but they never had girlfriends, and they hung out exclusively all the time. And
wow,
yeah,
no, I've never heard that. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with it.
We say that all the time.
No, but I gotta tell you, I would root for that couple. I guess. No, I swear to God, I've nothing. I don't see anything ever. It never occurred to me that they might be a gay couple, but I would love them to be a couple. So that's great. I never heard that. Yeah, so, that's great. What is it, Jarek?
Yeah, Jarek. Jack and Eric.
I support that.
To that point, and again, I keep diverting, but these are really good.
That's right.
Why did Will never get a long-term relationship? Like, that's one of the questions that we were asked earlier. It's like, Will, having been there, and we pretty much match everyone up, is it because we had Jack? Or, like, why did you never give Eric a long-term girlfriend?
I don't know the answer to that. It's a great question, though. I don't know. It's a good question. I feel bad now. No, you know, I mean, I do a little bit.
No, he found Jack, and he ended up.
He found Jack, and I know he loved Rachel. I forget what happened with Rachel. Was she there till the end or no?
She was there to the end. It turned out that neither Jack or Eric actually had feelings for Rachel. They were just in the competition of trying to win her over, and then neither of them end up with Rachel. So
sorry, audience, that I don't know that, but that's great. That's good to remember. Okay. You know, I know he had a lot of dates. It just never worked out. I forget which one I just watched. I don't know if it was the Eskimo or if it was Angela's Men, where him and Jack were looking for the soulmates. And they remember that the two girls, each of them had the wrong girl and wanted to go with the one that was more like them. I think the reason is that Eric was never worthy of really a long-term relationship. I mean, maybe by the end he was. And I'm sure after the very last episode, he met his soulmate.
Yeah.
And he was done with all the silliness. But I don't think it was a conscious decision. I think, I don't think it was a conscious decision. I think we had Corey and Topanga, we had Sean and Angela. I don't think we wanted another. We even had Alan and Amy. I don't think we needed another couple. You know what I mean? So
to that point, which couple do you think is the best of the series? Corey and Topanga, Corey and Sean.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I'm not even doing the pat answer. I mean, but let's just say if there's no Corey and Topanga, there's still a series. If there's Corey and Sean, Corey and Sean, I don't want 7 years of that. No, Corey and Sean, and again, I love Corey and Topanga. Love them. Love them. But Corey and Sean is the heart of the show. Yeah, Corey and Sean is the heart and soul of Boy Meets World. I mean, there's a million relationships that are heart and soul, but that's the number one, for me, reason to watch the show, to love the show. I love those two guys, actors and characters. They complete each other for sure.
Love it. Yeah. So to that point, we appreciate your time. Really quick, we are going to ask you one more question because you love movies and television so much. Yeah. I have two questions, a two-parter. One is, what were your TV shows that like formed you? Like, we have Boy Meets World,
but right?
What were the shows that you were watching that kind of like helped you understand and appreciate sitcom writing? And then the final question is, what are you watching now?
Okay. And you know, when I was watching them as a kid, I wasn't thinking, obviously, along the lines of this. But and one's going to sound very cliche, but I'll just say it anyway. And I don't even know if you know it, you're so young. But the Dick Van Dyke Show, I don't know if you ever watched that show.
Yep.
And, coincidentally, it's about TV writers. But I just, For me, that show is one of the funniest shows I've ever watched. Get Smart, one of my all-time favorite shows as a kid. I mean, yeah, that's the show that you talk with your friends about the next day. Get Smart was brilliantly ridiculous and funny. And I love Mel Brooks and Buck Henry. So I love that show. I watched a lot of our shows. Star Trek. I grew up with Star Trek, Combat, McHale's Navy. I mean, I watched so many things back in the day. In my midlife, there's The Sopranos, And then there's other shows like that that really, really got me stoked. I'd have to see a list of shows. But I watched, when I was a kid, there was only three networks. So I watched everything, Bewitched. I watched I Dream of Jeannie. I watched everything. I don't know if those inspired me as far as comedy, but they, I was never not watching TV. I watched TV, obviously too much. I didn't read a book until I was in my 20s. TV or movies. I go to movie theater every Saturday. Even with Michael Jacobs back then, he liked to ruin movies for people, even at the young age. So don't go to, I stopped going as an adult with him, honestly. But movies, I love TV. Movies were more my passion. Ben-Hur was the first movie I saw on a drive-in screen. I was four, and I remember going, oh my God, I just want to be part of that world, So love TV and movies. Well, I'll just tell you my two favorite shows. I think I heard you say, I know you love one. Well, The Bear is certainly one of the greatest. I think it's the best writing. It's the best ensemble cast. I love that show. It just answer me this. Why is that in the comedy category? I don't get it. That's
we
not
expect
a comedy.
You to know. Yeah. You have more TV experience than
that
we
has, do. That has no business being in the comedy. I'm sorry. Every time I see it, I saw the Emmys last night. I go, why is that in the comedy? To me, it's not a comedy. I think that's the richest show on television. Have you seen all of them?
Yes.
The one where Rich,
every single one.
The one where Richie works at that restaurant in the second season. To me, that's one of the best episodes of television.
Absolutely.
Ever. Breaks my heart. But anyway, so that, and there's a show that I don't hear people talking about enough. I don't think it was nominated for an Emmy. Reservation Dogs. Do you know this?
Yes.
Show?
Yeah. It's been my homework twice.
I talk about it in the same vein with The Bear because I think it's just a perfect show. It's three seasons. We finish, we watch it very quickly. And I think that's one of the unsung heroes out there that people are not watching enough. I think that's a great, I mean, I watch everything I can. Those are my two favorite shows right now. And they're both half hour, I realize, they're great. But I watch Fargo. I love everything. I like Darkness. I don't know if you watch Fargo. It's great.
Yes.
Are you in the new season?
We are caught up. The last season is next week.
I haven't seen all of the last season yet, so don't say anything.
Okay, I won't say anything. Yeah.
Don't pull a Michael Jacobs. Don't.
Yeah. Don't Michael Jacobs me, man. But watch Fargo. What's the one? Chemistry.
Lessons in Chemistry.
Lessons in Chemistry. Really enjoying that. I didn't think I would, but we're not done with that yet either. I watched that with my wife. I watch a lot of violent shows on my own, so I love. And Angela's Man, by the way, I didn't remember it at all. I had to watch it again today. I remembered it as I watched it. Julius Carey was great. Great. But I understand. It's funny. I was listening to your critique of it and I go, yeah, I can see why they didn't like that. Or yes, women obviously didn't write that scene because women, but we had women writers. Let me just say that. But they probably were shouted down by Michael or us or whatever. But it's an interesting to come back and hear, I wonder if we weren't that socially conscious. We're just trying to write an episode of TV. But I hear you. When you analyze it, I think you guys do a great job. It's really, I like your breakdown. I really do. And whether you like it or not, honestly, I don't care at this point. Yeah. I'm not getting paid anymore. It doesn't matter. I know you love the show, so that's all that matters.
We appreciate that. And thank you, because all of our critiques definitely come from a love of the show, of the characters, of us wanting the best out of these characters that we're invested in. And we try to approach each episode critique as if we're just talking about actual friends that we know. It's just like we're treating these people like they're real, even though obviously they're fiction. But there is so much, I think, that you guys put into the show that we're able to get real world application from that allows for us to have a more serious conversation about it.
Well, that's great. No, I love your guys' passion, and I do love anybody who loves anything. I get passionate about that project. You know, I'm in awe of a lot of things that I can't do, art, music. So, and I get passionate about this. I love, and again, I've only listened or watched two or three so far. I watched a little bit of Mark. I have to finish him so he doesn't get mad. But I will watch a bunch of yours because I actually want to hear what you have to say about these episodes, because I find fans, honestly, are more intuitively intelligent about the episodes than we are. We're too, you know, we're like, you know, hey, I wrote that, you know, but I don't care. I don't care about that. Some are good, some are great, some are bad. But I want to hear what you guys have to say. So I'm a fan of the show. Yeah. So I doubt I'll watch this one because this is too long.
Really. Jeff, I cannot thank you enough because this is literally, like we said, this is what we love doing.
Yeah. It's,
I know that you yourself want to give everyone credit, and we will as well, but it is an honor to speak to you.
Thank you.
You unknowingly were so involved in our childhood, and the stories that you wrote, the characters, the dialogue that you wrote and put out there became part of our lives. And what we want to say more than anything to all Boy Meets writers, but especially to someone like you who really took time to develop Sean and Angela, is that it's appreciated because you were talking to people on the other side of the country who really use these words as like a guideline for how to enter the world.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, guys, thank you. You guys are very kind, and I really do appreciate it. And I like that sentiment. Now, listen, I hope I haven't conveyed at all that I'm not really proud of being part of the show. It's one of those things. I don't talk about it. I don't think about it much. But when I hear it, it's always like, oh, yeah, I'm always touched when someone goes, oh, I love that show. It's very touching. It's really heartwarming to know that, like you said, we were part of your growing up. That's an amazing thing. You didn't think about it when we were doing it, but now in hindsight, it's a great thing to know, and it really warms my heart to hear it. So thank you for saying that, and thanks for doing what you guys do. This was a great joy for me. I appreciate this.
Yay. Thank you. That
boom. That was, you know what? I have to say, I did not plan on us being this kind of podcast. The kind of podcast that's like doing interviews with people, writers and producers and shit. This is all like so far beyond anything that we ever talked about when we first talked about this podcast. But as just a television nerd, I'm living for this shit. Absolutely. Audience, I don't know if you guys are getting what I'm getting out of these conversations, but it's so cool to just ask about the nuts and bolts of this show. Especially us, like we're always kind of wondering these... you know, these ideas of logic, like why did the characters do this? Why did the characters do that? And as much as we love talking to the cast, they're not always able to provide those answers to help fill in the blanks. But whenever we have someone on here like Jeff, who's able to give us that behind the scenes perspective, it means so much. And it fills in so many gaps.
I love that Jeff was, for the most part, was like, we didn't think about it. I'm like, yeah. You know, like the fact, I love that honesty of him just being like, you know, about it.
Yeah. Well, you know what's great, like talking to him and then, you know, talking to Gary, like it's just so obvious that it kind of feels like the Muppet Show. Like every week it's like we got to put on a good performance, and you know, it's not analyzing the story the way that we are, of just like, okay, well, what did we do three seasons ago with this character? It's more of just like, we got to put on a good show this week, so like what can we do? And understanding that is, I think, helps me have a little bit more empathy for the show and its weaker points. To understand that, like, hey, we have 23 episodes we have to make this season. Like, if 10 of them are good, that's a win.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point, even what Jeff was saying about needing to, like, write a script and then had the entire thing scrapped, he said at one, like maybe just the title was kept, and then you had to write from new, like understanding like that pressure to put out something new in such a short amount of time. We do start to understand why the show is the way that it is, but to your point, it also makes it so much more valuable to get the good episodes that we get. And I also love that they were like, sometimes we just threw things together. But when he talks about, and then there was Sean and the fact that he fought for it, I'm like, it's so amazing because your love for it really shines through. And I wish he had given himself the chance to like really fight for, yeah, for other storylines, because who knows what we would have gotten.
In so many ways, I could completely understand his, hey, I'm part of a much bigger team with talented people who all contributed. But Jeff, you're a contributor that played such a huge role. And
yeah.
And you know what? If I were part of a team like that, I probably would have a very similar headspace of just like, well, you know, I contributed, but it was a team, and wanting to give flowers to everyone, because it is like such a collaborative process. I mean, what did they say? Like 100 people work together to make an episode. Yeah. So like, yeah, it's no small group project at all. Like everyone is contributing something that hopefully adds a layer that pays off on camera.
Absolutely. And we hope that you guys enjoyed this episode. We hope that you enjoyed our conversation with Jeff. We will continue to go back to our season 7 reviews, as apparently they've been listening to you guys. The writers know who we are.
I'm not like saying that we're going to be on the cast of Dog Meets World or in the writers' room. But when Cory and Topanga's grandkids get a dog,
yeah,
if we're writing for that talking dog, you guys are going to be like, I was there then.
I love that you did the look who's talking approach. And
yes, that's the third.
I actually love Dog Meets World. I need it. I will watch it.
Oh my gosh. A dog that goes to like a dog park and there's like an older dog that's like mentoring.
Shepherd. This is like...
Feeny the dog, guys. Animated live action, give it to me. Disney, you're throwing money away.
Anyway, you guys, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Jeff, for joining us, and we hope to see you next week when we follow up with another season 7 episode.
We're following up next week. You know the episode, right?
I don't because I don't know exactly when this is coming out. So okay, don't make promises you can't keep.
Okay.
But that said, I do want to say thank you guys for listening. Reach out to us at Brummies World. We have merch. I don't know if you've seen our merch. Go check it out.
We got merch. We got hoodies. We've got mugs. We've got hat. We got shirts. Tank tops.
We got twink tops. But also, you guys, I want you to let us know what you want to see on merch, because I'm going to tell you, from this episode alone, I have like 3 merch ideas. But 100%. You guys tell us what you want to see. You guys tell us what merch will make you proud to wear and support Rummy Twirled.
And to the one gentleman from North Dakota who keeps sending us emails, we cannot put logos on edible underwear. So please stop with the request. We're doing what we can.
We will wrap this up. You guys, I think it's time to remember, as Feeny always says, to dream.
To try.
To do good.
Later, bros.
Later, bros.
This episode of Broad Meets World was produced by Siege and edited by Tony Curtis. Broad Meets World is a 2 Free Tokens media production.
Bye.
When this Broad Meets World.